In case you haven't heard, it's officially an Abercrombie summer. The A&F Vacation Shop has everything on your packing mood board. I desperately need their new one piece, the A&F Marina. It's strapless, so flattering, and paired with denim shorts will be my go-to beach outfit this summer. Finally, your suitcase isn't complete without finding that dress. You know, the one for the photo shoot. Abercrombie's boho dresses have that perfect beachy romantic look. Make it an Abercrombie summer. Shop their newest arrivals in-store, online, and in the app.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail. Companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Joe Levine, CEO of Foundy.
I've met hundreds and hundreds of founders now, even those that raise double-digit VC funding, and a lot of them really do not have the knowledge or insight on how to maximize their valuation upon an exit, and they haven't laid the foundations to build that deep-rooted value.
This is Joe. He's a two-time SaaS founder who successfully sold his first business in 2022. Since selling that company, his vocation has become to modernize the antiquated M&A process for other tech founders. The demand for a modernized exit process has been accelerated by the turbulence in the tech sector and the broader economy, especially now it's become harder to raise funding. However, founders face a bottleneck issue because most investment banks and advisory firms primarily focus on serving the most prominent companies, i.e. the ones with more than £50 million revenue. Foundy, however, is focusing on the bottom 90 of companies. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Joe to my podcast. We explore what's broken in the SaaS M&A market. Joe shares his vision and the change he's committed to create. He talks about the fundamental decisions he made and the mindset he follows to create a business that lasts. He elaborates on his learnings and how they created early momentum, and how that's now accelerated through word of mouth. Last but not least, he shares what he has learned from the mistakes he's made in hiring. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, why community-led growth is underrated, especially as a way to get people committed and create viral benefits. Secondly, the viability of your SaaS business isn't what you say yes to, but who you say no to. Thirdly, that the sticky part of your SaaS business doesn't necessarily have to be the product that you create. And lastly, that the value your customers love you for isn't often coming from the software, but from the life-changing moments. Well, hi, Joe. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me on, Tom. Much appreciated.
Yeah, we got to know each other recently at SaaS Talk in Dublin. And that's where things started to move on. The reason why I've invited you for this podcast is actually twofold. First of all, your experience as a founder of a SaaS company twice now, one being the company that you exited from through M&A, and now the platform that you're building to make M&A happening for B2B SaaS companies. So various things that I'd like to explore with you. But before we start talking about all of that, a little bit about you. What drives you as a person? What do you get energy from?
Fulfillment, I believe, Tom. I strive to make a real impact on this planet. And what my passion is entrepreneurship, and inspired by a few key role models. And for me, I have an incredible impact.
Who are they?
Oh, a lot of famous entrepreneurs. Brian Chesky, for example. His intuition, his creativity, blitz scaling. I love what he did with the cereal. and they're still kind of small, scrappy startup, and then look where they are today. And a few others, really. Some local role models, definitely, that I've drawn a lot of inspiration from. And I really want to have a big impact. And they can do that through our digital platform. And it's been a real exciting journey.
Yeah, I can imagine. First of all, you were the founder and CEO, if I'm correct, of a company called Zwings that you started in 2018 with some other co-founders. And then you exited that in 2022. And what I see on LinkedIn is that you started this new company, Foundy, in December 21. But there is, I think, a story around M&A there. So what was the big problem that you saw that caused you to sell your one company and start another to solve it?
Absolutely. Yeah, Foundy came about through a deep-rooted passion to modernize the M&A process after personally experiencing firsthand how incredibly antiquated the traditional exit and acquisition process is when selling Zwings. So I built that previous company up to about 80,000 users. We had to have a few pivots because of COVID, nearly crushed us, but we were able to pivot and experience hypergrowth after that. And hired quite a few staff, built a great team, and then we had a competitor that came knocking, put through an offer, and then what started, I didn't realize it would drag on over a year. It was, you know, one of the most painful experiences. Everything from engaging with buyers, the due diligence process, the back and forth communication via email. Then we got into legal documents and we had to print out 300 pages of documents, had to scan them back in. It was archaic and extraordinarily expensive. And for anyone listening, I'm sure you've been on calls with lawyers and you've got the partner here who charges £400 an hour, the senior associate, £300 an hour. Junior associate, £250. It's extraordinarily expensive. And I think no longer should it be like this. Really, founders want to be empowered with all of the tools, buyer network, and expert support they need in one platform. And we've seen the success stories of Deal, the HR platform, Seed Legals, ClickUp, and there's lots of all these all-in-one platforms. Yeah, the demand is there from society as a whole, but I think especially from founders, they want everything they need in one place.
Yeah. I mean, it brings back memories of my time at Unit4.
Yes.
Company has also acquired quite a bit of companies. And yeah, I mean, I recognize a lot of that. The question at the end is, who benefits most from these acquisitions? Is it the legal side of the house, or the business that buys them, or the business that, of course, gets sold? But it's painful, to say the least. So great that you started to build a platform like this. It's funny that, yeah, you've been through a one-year process to sell the company, and then it brings you the idea to start another one. Fascinating in itself. So you're now good 2 years into the process. Platform is there. It's two-sided, I assume. You know, that's what the marketplace is all about. Like, there's buyers and there's sellers.
Yeah.
What's the opportunity if you get this right? And what is already something like a before and after, if you would describe that?
Is the question, what is success look like? Or?
Well, the success for people that actually use the platform to be acquired or to acquire.
Sure. So in this instance, from a founder's perspective, yeah, success with it, like listing in just 10 minutes. You can create an anonymous profile on foundy.com. Even if you're a long way away from actually wanting to exit, it's nice to get onto the platform, access the educational portal, learn step by step through video content, glossary, and advice on how to build deep-rooted strategic value, financial value. And then we can help you through with the building of the documentation. An information memorandum is, of course, one of the key documents. It's similar to a pitch deck. It's about 40 pages long, a lot more detailed, and it's for an acquisition event. And then we can help you list in front of a lot of buyers, thousands and thousands of buyers. Our network is growing by about 1,000 buyers a month at the moment. And very quickly, you can start receiving messages from buyers. We've had some clients sell in sub 30 days. They've received 8 messages within the first week of listing. And yeah, it was 100% cash up front offer. But we've had others that have seen really, really good results. A lot of cash offers, some earnouts, but we're trying to help founders get as much cash up front in their deals. But the idea is that by having one platform that you can log into, you have all of the tools in one place and the buyer network, so that it's no longer having to get a broker, an advisor, a lawyer, a tax advisor, and you're managing the business in parallel, and you're managing all these different buyer questions and due diligence processes. Imagine running an investment round with loads and loads of VCs, yeah, but even more amplified, because you're not just selling a sliver of risk business, you're selling the entire entity.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah, I mean, I've heard many of those stories also with regards to funding, getting funding in order to take the business to the next level, which is, everybody's always talking about it took months and months out of my schedule. And you still have to run the business as well. But this is possibly even more impactful, both on like the effect of it, of course, but also more emotionally, I guess. Yeah. Because there you go. There's your baby going.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, yeah, I'm talking a little bit about that journey. You know, you started the business in 2021. What has been a decision that appeared to be really important for the success that you see right now? Because, I mean, you can go into so many different directions. What has been fundamental so far?
I think having built an exit to the last business was definitely very helpful, not just because the M&A experience and kind of the passion that's come from that, but also just learning kind of what works in terms of capital efficient, strategic growth, go-to-market strategies, fundraising has become easier. But fundamentally, the business model itself can be very lucrative. I mean, at the end of the day, we are modernizing M&A. It's known for being one of the most lucrative processes. So it means that we can achieve relatively early profitability, even with a relatively small number of transactions. But yeah, from a growth standpoint, we're now at 10,000 users. 26% of new users come from referrals, positive word of mouth, which is good. And I think utilizing a really slick referral scheme, incentivizing existing users to create testimonials through videos, and it's good. A great SaaS tool is called Senja, S-E-N-J-A, for any SaaS founders. It's fantastic. Just streamlines the process of gathering testimonials. And that's helped a lot, I think. Just building out a really good community that invites new users. And that helps to get that virality effect.
Certainly. Yeah, you're talking about a couple of things already that I was going to ask later on as well. From what I get from this is that you're bootstrapping the company from the ground up, correct?
We like to behave like a bootstrap company wherever we can. We have raised a bit of money, and we are about to raise quite a large amount of capital from a big VC in the next few weeks, which is quite exciting. Sure, it would be nice to stay bootstrap, but I think given the growth ambitions that we have and the scale that we want to get to, and of course that means more founders that we can help sell their businesses, we are going to raise more VC capital, and that's going to hit just in the next few weeks. So
I mean, of course, I'm not sure what you did with your previous company's Wings, whether that was bootstrap, yes or no, but you make an interesting point. We try to keep a bootstrap mindset, but we take the capital in order to grow faster, to achieve the growth ambition. Do you already have sort of product market fit? I mean, there's repetition, and it's really about scaling that.
I think we are very near product market fit, very near. I wouldn't say, I mean, there is no quantifiable definition in this context of what that looks like, but I mean, by the sounds of things, I read a lot with Lenny's newsletter, learned so much from Lenny's newsletter, Pavilion, the great membership there, and Reforge, PLG. What we're trying to build is a platform that you can't live without. I mean, that's kind of the common phrasing there is, if we were to suddenly disappear, would founders, you know, be upset, so to speak? And I like to think that we're moving into that place very, very near, I think, in the next few months, especially with some product refinements that we've been making together with users. So we've optimized a really slick feedback loop. We've all over our website, we've got buttons and surveys and the like, just to collect as much feedback as we possibly can to learn exactly the problems that we're needing to solve on behalf of customers. Because I think before, I openly admit that, you know, we often try to think, okay, what does the collective user want? What are the features that they actually want? But in reality, we need to make it about their actual needs based on feedback.
What is the difference between that? I mean, I think I've got the answer to that, but just to give an anecdote on that.
I think founders often have a grand vision of what a given business could look like, what products might be suitable. But I think in our context, at least, because we're modernizing the end-to-end M&A process, that includes deal origination, matchmaking buyers and sellers, streamlining communication, due diligence, legals, escrow, et cetera, that there's kind of a lot in there, a lot of different stages in the M&A deal cycle. I mean, most companies just modernize one bit, like the accounting bit, for example. We're doing the whole M&A cycle. So with that in mind, there is, you know, we could go off track slightly. So that is why it's particularly relevant in our context to ensure we get as much feedback from users, stakeholders in the industry, et cetera, so we can learn exactly what their given problems are, whether that's the legal documents taking 3 or 4 months and costing an arm and a leg, and how we can solve that with our legal AI co-pilot that we're launching soon, et cetera.
Yeah, it's just a common thing. You know what it's about. You've lived it yourself, but still the essence in terms of when it becomes really a platform that people cannot live without,
Absolutely.
That's in that level of detail.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, in my book, The Remarkable Effect, I'm talking about, you know, creating moments of magic. And that's not about, you know, the kind of the fancy type things or the cool things on your platform. It's really helping people accomplish something that they thought was going to be super complicated. And then it appears to be super simple because of what you've done for that. And it really helps in the most difficult moments. So that's an interesting thing that you say that you're using the platform to get that feedback any moment of the day. That's an interesting thing as well, you know, just the thought of building a platform, an M&A platform that people cannot live without, as if you're going to go to sell your company 15 times. Isn't that a problem, by the way, that your user base is only there for a moment?
Well, in terms of the lifetime value of the customer?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, you got two angles. The companies that want to be acquired, they are there for a shorter period of time, like a couple of months to maybe a year or so. But of course, then there's the other side as well, the buyers. How do you keep the stickiness going for the buyer part?
Sure. It's a great question. And yeah, fundamentally, you know, M&A or buying or selling, especially selling, is a life-changing event. But I think entrepreneurs fundamentally have a obsession with building businesses. you know, Ton, you've got over 28 years experience building businesses, working with a lot of founders. I'm sure you've seen many repeat founders over their journey. It's a lifestyle, really, you could say. I'm yet to meet a SaaS founder that willingly retires because it's so much fun. And with that in mind, especially with lots of opportunities now to build micro SaaS businesses, you know, 500,000 ARR and then they sell it. I mean, and we're making that possible. So there's entrepreneurs on our platform that have sold businesses. They bought one and they may buy another. We've had buyers that have bought a business and now they're scaling it. And then maybe in a year from now, they'll come back once it's twice the size and sell it again. So there's a lot of activity in this kind of micro SaaS and M&A space, buying and selling, and our platform makes that possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Building on that, actually, so the education and community side is actually quite key. So to keep user sticky platform, we're building somewhat of a news feed of opportunities, community-led growth, people giving tips, tools, and advice on how to build a business, how to sell a business. Educational content through videos and things. That's a way we can keep users sticky, part of the platform.
Yeah, exactly. Even if you're possibly not wanting to sell the platform.
Yeah.
Since you're, well, you just might have mentioned the point on micro SaaS businesses, building them to a certain extent, to a certain level, selling them again. Of course, there's a lot of these founders in there that come and want to sell their business and they know this, but they don't know that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of learning going on as well. And I imagine that if you do that in community, it can really help grow your business as well. So that's on the side of keeping the sold businesses coming back. And on the other hand, of course, you got possibly the VCs and the investment houses and so on that build, or companies, corporates that build a portfolio of companies that want to be part of the platform. For them, of course, it's a lot more sticky because it's constantly little duels coming to market to that. Mm-hmm. So what has been the hardest nut to crack in order to keep that balance, you know? Because marketplaces need balance. Not enough buyers and the sellers won't come and the other way around.
Absolutely. It's the classic chicken and egg problem. And it's something I've been learning a lot about in parallel with product-led growth. And I think getting in recurring income is obviously important. It's more predictable, sustainable. And by packing as much value into the platform as possible, we can start to feasibly charge recurring income to buyers, sellers, M&A advisors using our platform. But fundamentally, if you bring high quality sellers to the platform, buyers will come. Yeah. And that is what we're seeing now. We've got a whole rapidly growing list of really high quality sellers. Most of the businesses on for sale are profitable. We're seeking to increase our vetting process to make sure the businesses are really high quality. A lot of SaaS businesses, e-commerce, digital agencies, that's our main focus for now, but especially on SaaS. And yeah, it's great. It's great to be winning the trust of high profile founders, generating many millions in revenue. And they spent 5-6 years building their business. And then they're utilizing our platform and our advisory services to help them sell their company for the maximum valuation. So it's great. And that's partially because our buy network is proving to be high quality as well. So yeah, through various different growth channels, we can attract high quality sellers, high quality buyers. And that makes it possible for founders to receive lots of good messages from relevant buyers.
Yeah, exactly. And the quality is, of course, super important, because the last thing you want is, you know, all kind of sort of empty houses there with a big promise and nothing behind it. So does it actually mean that you do due diligence even before they enter the platform?
So, I mean, we're only approving 1 out of 3 registrations at the moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So some founders are, you know, joining for the community and educational part. They're not actually wanting to list straight away. But there's others that, you know, we can't necessarily on the platform, at least not yet, until they kind of see a certain threshold of performance. But we really want to focus on quality businesses. Yeah, it helps a lot with our platform. We don't want to be selling kind of failing, distressed businesses necessarily. I know there is a market for it, definitely. And we can help wherever appropriate, especially if a company's got a high quality product or patents or a strong management team. Definitely there's strategic appeal there, but ideally healthy businesses.
Let me make a small interruption here. Joe just made an excellent remark about building the foundation for a SaaS business that will last, being super clear who you're for, and more importantly, who you're not for. And that takes guts, because as he says, there's a market for the ones that are not ideal. And by saying not for you, you'll definitely miss out on that part. But by saying no, you're also saying yes to quality growth and attracting more of the ones that you do want to work with. For them, this means quality buyers and quality sellers, and that's noticed. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They acknowledge they cannot please everyone, build something valuable and desirable, and with that, create fans, not just customers. It becomes their flywheel. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
Yeah, I mean, and you already mentioned that sometimes people want to join, but there's still like that last bit to do in order to optimize the way they present themselves for the right selling amount. So what do you do there?
So we're utilizing a tool which pulls through metrics from their performance feed. So whether it's Stripe, Google Analytics, well, any of the kind of typical performance tracking tools, Sage, QuickBooks, Xero, for example, Amazon Seller. And that way we can gain immediate insight into their health and possibly the trajectory of the business. And that helps to vet the businesses, but also it helps buyers undertake really efficient due diligence. So we're trying to, especially in the UK, everyone's very polite, formal, and going back and forth. And what they really want to do on both sides is this going to be a deal or not? And rather than it dragging out over weeks and months, you just want, you know, super quick due diligence, up to date. None of this kind of back and forth with lots of emails and messages with various different stakeholders, charging fees and data rooms that go out of date. Instead, you've got visualized data in a dashboard where you can easily undertake due diligence. That's where we're moving into.
Yeah. Okay. Well, but behind my question there was the moment you come to the platform and there's still some value to add. Can you learn that from being part of the platform? Do you help, for example, position the company in a different way so that the value increases? Are there like courses, community parts where you can tune those things as you're becoming a member?
Absolutely. Yes. The educational side, I think, is massive. And I'll reinforce that we encourage founders and buyers to join the platform, even if they're years away from actually wanting to exit, because it's so critically important laying the foundations for, number one, building deep-rooted strategic value, and number two, building deep-rooted financial value. And we can do that through our end-to-end educational portal, which is a self-serve guide with video content, checklist, glossary explaining jargon, so that you're very familiar with what are the key components of strategic value. That's a strong brand, social media presence, thought leadership from the founder themselves, patents, trademarks, copyrights. Like, it's a customer base. There's so many incredible chunks of knowledge that you can quickly gain that founders can be like, oh, I should have thought of that. Well, if I implement that, then maybe in a year or two from now, when I actually come to exit, I'll be able to sell for 1 or 2 million extra, like another couple of million cash in your bank account, because you know, put those, you know, early planning in place. Because otherwise, and it's scary, I've met hundreds and hundreds of founders now, even those that raise double digit VC funding, and a lot of them really do not have the knowledge or insight on how to maximize their valuation upon an exit. And they haven't laid the foundations to build that deep-rooted value. And worse still, at the very end, once they get onto calls with prospective buyers, because they haven't been taught how to kind of act on those calls, sometimes they can give away too much. Maybe it's a competitor. Maybe they mistakenly let them know that, you know, they've always dreamed about selling to that particular business, and you know, they'll do everything to sell that business, etc. It can be detrimental to the valuation for shareholders. So
absolutely, yeah, that's what negotiation is all about, right? It's almost like poker.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
So what has been the journey to get to the first 100 sellers on the platform, and then the first 100 buyers on the platform? I mean, did it take long? What worked and what didn't work for you?
Sure. I mean, yeah, zero to one is always the hardest bit, but it's where a lot of lessons can be made, and we try and document and learn from every experience, mistake, challenge that we come across. But yeah, it was a lot of hard graft. I think there still will be a lot of hard work to go into this. I work night and day on this business, staying in, you know, up late until the early hours if necessary, helping founders wherever possible to get through their process. I mean, yeah, it was difficult. So yeah, a lot of time spent on our products, a lot of complexities there that we've overcome, especially with kind of the scale that the products that we're introducing and things. The sales and marketing, the chicken and egg problem, getting enough buyers and sellers, the platform, making that process as slick as possible. Even the landing pages themselves. I mean, we invest a little bit of money into ads, for example, and you know, hard work on various different channels. But as soon as they land on the website, if it doesn't load fast, if the headline caption and the hero image is not quite right, you know, the bounce rate can be quite high. So we worked hard on that. And I think now our conversion rate is 14% from website traffic to users, which I think compared to the market average, it's like 4% for B2B websites or something. So we really just concentrated on the entire user flow of that customer journey and tried to give them as best experience as possible, but just be obsessed about learning and improving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting, of course, how this works, because you're not actually selling something. You come to the website with the idea to sell yourself. So it's, on the one hand, of course, it's understanding, okay, what's in it for me? But on the other end, it's like a big trust thing. I remember the conversations that, for example, the challenges that Airbnb in the past had to deal with. And it was not about the offering itself. It was all about creating trust.
Yep, it is.
And trust at the end is fundamental in every sale. What has worked for you to create that trust where people say, okay, yeah, this is a no-brainer?
Sure. We're seeking to try and vet the profiles, buy and sell side as much as reasonably possible. We try and match make wherever appropriate. We can jump in and help do it a bit more manually, but our tech has improved significantly, so we can make matchmaking a lot more seamless. So there's that, the vetting process, and just streamlining it so that we can teach both buyers and sellers or give them guidance on do's and don'ts wherever appropriate, just so that no one's wasting anyone's time. I think that's really true. Key, giving them as much information up front as possible, of course with the seller's permission, and trying to qualify both the buyers and sellers as much as possible, I think is absolutely key. Yeah, and internally, I think, you know, from an advisor perspective, we've hired an excellent team of in-house M&A advisors. We're about to hire probably one of our biggest hires thus far, with extensive background in M&A, SaaS acquisitions mostly, actually, works in corporate development and things. So he's seen a lot of transaction experience, which we can then translate that guidance onto to our community. So yeah, we're just trying to give as much knowledge, insight, and transparency up front.
Yeah, exactly. I think the transparency bit is really important. And the fact that you're vetting and they're seeing the seriousness of the questions being asked gives them a feeling also that, okay, they're in good hands. And I think that's what it's really all about.
Yep.
Yeah. Was there a moment where you started to see a tipping point in terms of more sellers coming on board, more buyers coming on board? What was that about, if there was a tipping point?
Yeah, I think actually interesting, we're kind of at that crux of hyperscale growth, that point of liquidity and critical mass, you could say, is coming soon. So yeah, we've got about 10,000 users now, growing by about 1,000 a month, but we only have one marketing manager, no sales manager, not really doing any outbound at all. Most of it is inbound. So I think we were there at that point now of kind of getting to that crux of velocity, growth, flywheel, network effects and things.
Was there any moment where you say, okay, well, it's kicking in right now, and did it have a specific reason or not? It's hard to say.
I think we've built a relatively strong brand, seemingly relative to the number of inbounds from word of mouth and referrals, yeah, et cetera. And then, of course, the product itself, I think, is improving significantly, especially over the next few weeks and months. So I like to think that the product itself draws a lot of users. I wouldn't say there's any single reason, to be honest, okay, especially with a multi-sided marketplace. There's just so many angles. But I think one thing we've learned is that we don't want to kind of dig into so many different channels and experiment, you know, all the time. And I think especially now we're closing our investment round for a few million quid in the next few days. I think we've got quite a good sense of what our go-to-market strategies are, where to deploy the capital. And that way we can optimize for a good growth efficiency ratio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect.
I've seen, yeah.
And what I'm always interested in, to just to keep learning, based on the two companies you founded, is there anything that you specifically orchestrate or steer for in order to create a software company that people start talking about and keep talking about? And what is that thing that you're steering for?
I think especially in, yeah, it's a great question. By the way, the book is exceptional. I've ordered it. It looks brilliant, especially given the experience that you've gained over the years. For 2023, I think community education is of paramount importance. I think the sales-led approach, a lot of kind of traditional sales with emails and especially all this automation, it doesn't really work, especially with B2B. A lot of personalization is key. But in order to jump a few steps and get responses, I think having that strong brand, thought leadership on platforms like LinkedIn, video content, giving freebie education in bite-sized chunks, it might be downloadable PDFs and things, and that community aspects, like we're building out a massive community of SaaS founders and just giving value for free as much as reasonably possible. And that helps a lot. So when they do receive that inbound call or email or LinkedIn connection request, they're already very familiar with your company. They already trust your company and they sign up and convert into a paying user very, very quickly. But it does take an all-encompassing approach, a lot of hard work, I think. But times have changed by all means.
Exactly. I like your point about community-led approach. That's exactly also what I see as a big breakthrough in the last couple of years. And so many companies are not leveraging that yet. Although they have a pretty solid customer base, hence a community, a potential community. So that's an interesting thing to embrace and to leverage for your growth.
Sure.
So last question. From the two companies that you founded, what are the lessons learned that you wish you'd known when you were starting them? So what does it do and what does it don't?
A lot. I've actually started to document them. And I feel like an unwritten responsibility to help, especially first-time founders, wherever I possibly can, on their journeys. Because I've been through a lot of stress, made a few mistakes, definitely, but I think I've learned from a lot of them. So from a tech standpoint, I think having from an early stage, not necessarily a CTO, could well be a head of engineering or a senior engineer that has leadership responsibility capabilities, someone that's willing to really document everything and anything, processes, et cetera, so that when new team members join, it's very clear about the approach that's been taken. Trying to keep things in-house as far as reasonably possible, especially with tech, I think is key, especially if you're building a relatively complex product. Hiring is so complex. It really, really is. And someone somewhere should build a SaaS company to try and qualify candidates even more. And I think not being fazed or wowed necessarily by logos, but more about, you know, factors like, are they genuinely really passionate, hungry, and motivated as an individual? I think what someone once said is like, what are the best tip around hiring? And it was, I can't remember the name of the person that said it, but they said, find people that come with batteries included. And what they mean by that is that hunger, that deep-rooted passion, it's so key, because it helps, it transpires into an ability to learn quickly, to work hard, go above and beyond for customers and there are, you know, other team members. And that's, you know, one of the most important things with any company, let alone just a SaaS company. So hiring is complex. It's documenting processes, always taking the approach of how can this process be streamlined, templated, automated, if it can be, what have we learned from this experience, etc. I think that is really key to avoid mistakes and just constantly learning and improving. That's what I always say to my team, and it's worked quite well.
Good advice. Thanks for sharing all of this. I love the story. Love the fact that you've taken the guts almost to build a platform that, so many companies out there in the world for the last decades have been suffering to go through the M&A process. Hopefully it will lead to lowering that bar to do that and to create even more opportunity. So good luck on that journey. Where can people go to find out more about Foundy or to say hi to you?
We welcome founders, shareholders, whether investors or a founder or a C-suite member, and acquirers to join foundy.com, F-O-U-N-D-Y. And you can create an account. It's all anonymous. So you can create a seller listing, list on the platform. It's free to join, free to browse around as a buyer. We only charge a success fee on the sell side, a very small success fee, much smaller than the market average. And yet we've been repeatedly told that our buy network, our advisory is apparently better than most. And then on the buy side, it's free to join, free to browse around. And there's a small fee if you want to start messaging sellers. We've got lots of exciting tools coming out very soon to help with due diligence, legal documentation, a very, very advanced tool for that. But ultimately, our mission is to democratize access to exit opportunities and help as many founders as possible access life-changing payouts via exits. And we've had incredible success stories. So I mentioned at the beginning of the call about the importance of impacts and fulfillment. Personally, for me, when a founder comes to us post-exit and they've, you know, bought a house, that was a client that sold a business recently, another one that bought an all-round the world ticket to go traveling with their partner, which was awesome. I didn't realize that existed. And they went, you know, I think they're now traveling around the world now. And another one that can now afford to put their children through private school. And that was kind of a dream come true for them. That for me was so incredibly powerful and fulfilling. And it gets me up in the morning and it really, really drives me to build Foundy. So please do join our community, enjoy our educational portal, and feel free to list anonymously in front of thousands of buyers.
Well said. I mean, it's interesting, by the way, like, what is the business that you're really in? And it's, in essence, it's about creating these life-changing moments, and getting the funding underneath the thing that you're passionate to do next. And that's what it's enabling.
For sure.
Perfect. Well, good luck on the journey. Thanks for sharing your wisdom and time. Keep it going.
Thank you, Ton. And I appreciate your daily emails as well. It's a really good newsletter. I've been enjoying reading them. I look forward to reading your book as well.
Thanks.
Amazing.
That's highly appreciated.
Amazing. All right. Have a great afternoon.
And this ends my conversation with Joe. And I hope you enjoyed it. If so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Joe Lewin, CEO of Foundy. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book,
or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.